All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hey everyone, Adam D. from Indefensive Ska here. A little note before we start the show. Los Angeles is dealing with multiple catastrophic fires. A lot of people have lost their homes and are in need. If you're able to help, please do so. There are a lot of great organizations you can donate to, like California Fire Foundation, Pasadena Humane Society, Mutual Aid LA, and there's even a list of people in the music industry that have lost their homes. Links are in the show notes for our Rob Harvilla episode. Thanks.
Consequence Podcast Network. This is Indefensive Ska. Our mission is to document the ska scene from its traditional roots through until its emergence as a diverse global genre. The influence of ska resonates through your favorite bands and artists in ways you might have missed. I'm your co-host, Adam D., of Omnigon and Asian Man Records band, Link 80. Joining me is your host, Aaron Carnes, renowned author of the book Indefensive Ska, which is currently available in its expanded second edition.
Adam, how many times do you think you've seen the viral video, Jesus is a friend of mine?
Jesus is a friend of mine.
Jesus is my friend.
Jesus is a friend of mine.
I have a friend in Jesus.
Jesus is a friend of mine.
Jesus is my friend.
Jesus is a friend of mine.
Okay, so you probably experienced this also. We're everybody's ska friends.
Yeah.
Shout out Brent Friedman also. We're the people who get sent the ska memes. So when the Jesus is a friend of mine video goes viral, which it does every couple of years, I feel like, it gets sent to me dozens of times.
I don't get sick of it. I love it. I think
it's great.
It's not really a meme so much as just like a weird like relic from the early 80s.
Yes. Well, that was the thing too, is when the first time I ever saw it, I wasn't sure what it was. I didn't know if it was made to look that way.
Let's talk about the video. Like, what do you remember visually about the video?
It, you know, it looks like a dubbed VHS copy. Mm-hmm. The qualities, you know, of a certain era. Everything's kind of pink and baby blue. Everybody's wearing these frilly blue tuxedos that don't make any sense. And it's a bunch of people playing ska and praising Jesus.
One of the things I was rewatching the video and that really struck me as really funny about the setup is that all the way to the right, you have the drummer, you have the guitarist and the bassist. The bassist is singing. They're all like kind of they're squished together. And then all the way to the left, kind of almost totally separate from those three, you have a piano that's not being played. You have a chorus of four people behind the piano. And then you have a woman in front of the piano playing a keyboard. So it's almost like two groupings of people. It's a really bizarre setup, I think.
I had forgotten about the piano. The piano really makes it feel weird.
The piano exists as to help the chorus of four people kind of have like add dimension, I think. That's how it feels anyways.
Yeah.
The song itself, what do you remember about the song?
The song itself is like a catchy ska song.
Yeah.
Like that, I think that's the weirdest thing about it, is it's like legitimately a ska song. You know, usually when people send me like a ska thing that they're like, oh, this is ska, maybe it'll be like a polka or something.
Yeah.
But this is like actually a ska song.
Today we're going to dive into the history of this video, but also we're going to talk about its ongoing legacy and place in internet culture. So the video popped up initially on the blog Dougsploitation in 2008. And then not very long after, same year, it went on YouTube and it went viral fast. It really took off fast. As of this recording, it has 15 million views on YouTube. The band performing the song, they're called Sunseed. They're a Catholic band that was based in Brooklyn from the late 70s and then broke up around 1983. Jesus Is a Friend of Mine is their only ska song, so they were not a ska band. The viral clip was recorded in 1981 on the religious public access show called The First Estate. It got so popular that the song was even referenced in TV shows like Glee. I think they covered it on Glee. And then the show Community, they did a part where they sang the song kind of as a joke. So it really got into culture. But for this episode, we're going to talk to multiple people to tell the story and to kind of analyze it from different perspectives. We have Sunseed bassist and the singer-songwriter of the song, Sal Policetti. The lead singer for the UK band The Scapones, Paul Williams. He has an interesting part in this story. And Doug Principavalli, who ran Dougsploitation, the blog that basically launched this video into the internet.
Aaron, start things off. Let's go to internet expert Jamie Loftus.
My name's Jamie Loftus. I'm a comedian and podcaster on shows like 16th Minute and the Bechdel Cast.
I'm not an internet expert, but to me it seems unusual in that the video came out in like 2009, and I feel like it continues to go viral every couple of years. Like, it just seems like a whole new wave of people find out about it and start posting about it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, first off, is that normal for this type of viral video content, or is that unusual in your experience?
Oh, that's a good question. Because I feel like I've been around for a couple waves of this video going viral.
Yeah.
I think it is like an internet generational thing. I think it's sometimes just like a platform shift. Like, I'm sure that there's just TikTok users who found this video at some point. And I think, I mean, if you know better than I do, it started on MySpace, right? Was that where it was like first uploaded or something like that?
No, it's actually started on Dougsploitation.
Oh my God. Okay. So, I mean, I've noticed there are videos, especially videos that are like fairly inoffensive and feel weirdly out of time with the internet, like Jesus Is a Friend of Mine, that tend to go viral over and over and over and over. And I can't really put my finger on why, but one I always think of is like Kathy Geiswit, who made the Kathy comics. Every, like, once a year, reliably, people will figure out that she's hot, and like that goes viral. And they're like, wow, the creator of Kathy comics about women's insecurities was really conventionally beautiful. That goes viral every single year. I can't tell. I have no account of why, because it's like, we're on the same platform. We did this last year. Why are we doing it again? I don't know. Jesus Is a Friend of Mine feels like that category of viral, where maybe it's not even just like the feeling of rediscovery, but it doesn't, at least for me, it's never gotten old. It's also like the Boston Slide Cop in that way, where you're never going to get tired of listening to Jesus Is a Friend of Mine. You're never going to get tired of seeing a cop fall down a slide violently. You know, there's just a beautiful, timeless nature to it.
Well, the part that surprises me is that, like, even within like ska Facebook groups, like the place where you would assume the people are most like in tune with anything ska related, in like 2024, it'll be like someone will post in there like, have you seen this video? And I'm like, how have you not seen this video?
That feels almost generational at this point too, which makes me feel very old. But like, I have a cousin who's like a teenager, and she recently found out about Rickrolling. And you're like, oh, I guess that this is just going to be something that we discover over time, and every generation thinks, you know, the thing was their idea. And you're like, oh no, we actually watched that 20 years ago. It was awesome.
Well, yeah, this is the next part I'm curious about, because Sal, I've gotten to know Sal. He's the bass player and singer for this song. The band's called Sunseed.
Yeah.
He just loves it. He loves it. People watch it. He's played it live at some shows. I kind of think of this as like sort of the Shatner effect, like just a full on 100% embracing of the thing that maybe people are laughing at and owning it to the point where people end up respecting you. Like,
yeah,
it seems to me like the internet often gets really dark. Like, people go viral and then they get harassed, or they start digging up dirt on them for some weird reason. And even something innocent usually turns dark.
Yeah.
But I've not seen anything dark come of this. Is that, what is your experience with this stuff? Is it unusual for something to stay so innocent and so wholesome like this for so long?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it really does take kind of a special person. I think about this a lot because, I mean, I'm sure that this starting to go viral in the late 2000s, early 2010s, before there really was this sort of milkshake duck process formed where the person goes viral, everyone's like, they're great for 3 days. And then someone's like, let me go in their old tweets. And then you're like, no, actually, they're a horrible person. We hate them. And then the person has to, you know, answer for what they've said, figure out how they're going to navigate it or not. So this would have all started before that was sort of a commonly accepted practice. And I think a lot of people kind of scrub their past at this point in anticipation that like this could happen to you. And it just sounds like, I mean, by your description, it sounds like he's a really sweet person.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that he's chosen to embrace it. I feel like that is, it's not necessarily a fair thing to ask of someone, but I have, just based on people that I've profiled or looked into, that does seem to be the smartest way to handle it. The way to that it never works is getting defensive about it. Then people just get upset with you. It feels like your options are to either do nothing, don't acknowledge it exists and continue your life, or fully embrace it. And those are the only sort of two routes that I've found bring people peace in any way. And I mean, in his case, like, you know, if people are going to be posting the song all the time, he might as well get in on it. You know, like, I don't know if there's any, in this case, like any like financial gain to be had or whatever it is, any professional gain, but there are plenty of people who were memes that like, regardless of whether they engage it or with it or not, their image is going to be everywhere, whether they like it or not. And so I think a lot of people are like, well, then I'm going to, you know, take narrative control to the extent that I can, you know, talk to some people that like me, cash out, and hopefully move on with my life without, you know, things getting too weird.
You doing 16 minutes of fame and kind of like diving into the sort of the concept of the main character of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the main character of the internet oftentimes is short-lived.
Yeah.
Or do you feel like, or sometimes it feels like it goes on and on and on and on. Like in this case, I feel like this is an example of like, there were moments where this was like everywhere, but it just sort of exists in culture now. Does that feel like that's sort of the norm or the exception to these sort of, you know, the internet main character sort of things?
I think it kind of depends. It makes sense to me that Jesus Is a Friend of Mine has staying power because it's super visual. It's like, it's very fun to listen to. It reminds me of like a lot of memes that sort of have this staying power because they work in multiple formats. Like I just covered the overly attached girlfriend, and that works if you watch the video, that works if you just, it's just like a GIF reaction. Like there's so many different ways that it can be a recognizable image that I feel like it's been around for, you know, 10 plus years, and you don't even need to really know what the source is to enjoy the visual. Jesus Is a Friend of Mine feels very in that category. Whereas, I don't know, especially when it's like someone who becomes the main character for being an asshole or like making some shit up, it's like harder to recall in shorthand. It's very specific. It's usually not fun to be like, remember when that person ended up working at Lockheed Martin? Like, yes, I do remember it, but how are you going to bring that up in normal conversation where you could just like, I feel like you could just throw in Jesus Is a Friend of Mine, you know, apropos of almost nothing. And it's always a hit, and it feels good to remember. That's a lot. And a lot of main characters, it does not feel good to remember.
Yeah. There's definitely like the sort of like user engagement element, I think, that happens with a lot of the internet stuff that makes it continue to go. Like, I mean, for instance, like an older example is how like Smash Mouth's Hey Now, or All Star rather, became like a thing that everybody remixed and everybody like turned into some version of their own meme, so that it took a life of its own.
Such a special time.
That's such a special time.
I loved, yeah, the just like peak. I think it lined up with like Shrek 4 coming out or something, where it was just everyone was on it. I loved it.
Yeah, yeah. My all-time favorite All-Star remix was DJ Cumberbund's Sad All-Star. That's my top favorite one, where he just switched it to minor key, and it's just beautiful.
That rocks.
But there's some remix elements to Jesus Is a Friend of Mine, but I feel like it's not really what... It's really just because it's a funny video, I guess. Like,
hard to improve. I watched a couple of the like more popular remixes before we got on, and it's none of them topped the original.
I think the Satan Is a Friend of Mine is probably the funniest, just because it's like, yeah, the exact opposite. And so it kind of like, I don't know, it kind of like adds a commentary to the original, but it's still not as funny as the original.
No, the original is beautiful. And I feel like there, I don't know, I'm so glad that there is a good ska meme about that is really, because I love that sort of category of song where they're like, okay, let's take this contemporary genre and try to convert people to Christianity with it, because it like it's always so silly without fail. Like I mean my generation was like, I'm trying to think of like it, just sort of like Christ-like emo music. Just really like pop punk for Jesus. I remember my church youth group was like played some like Jesus pop punk, and it never hits. All the kids can always see right through it. They're like, what the fuck is this? Like, you know, this music is supposed to be about my crush, not Jesus Christ, my savior.
Yeah, I think what this song sounds unique to me and as a Christian song, because it doesn't have like a converting element to it. It just sounds like a celebration of Jesus.
Just a weird brag about my awesome friend, Jesus.
So even as a Christian song, it feels sort of wholesome.
Yeah. It reminded me like aesthetically and with how specific and like reproducible it is. It almost feels like it's in the keyboard category.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like completely timeless, not really replicatable, adorable, wholesome, like out of time in this weird way. Because by the time, I didn't even know this till recently, but by the time Keyboard Cat went viral, he died. Like he was no longer with us. So just like weirdly out of time. I don't know.
Is this gone, this sort of viral video, this sort of internet main character? Or have we exhausted all the old videos that are cute?
That's a good question. I feel like for as long as people are going up to their attic and digitizing old boxes of VHS, there will be an occasional main character like this. And especially the mystery element is really fun to follow, of like tracking down, where are they now? Did they keep making music? Like all that stuff. I feel like they'll probably become increasingly rare. And it makes sense to me that there were more of this type of main character in the late 2000s, early 2010s, because that was when people were just starting to post old digitized clips to the internet. So I'm sure it'll slow down as time goes on. But personally, I hope we get it. I think that there's like a very special quality, especially now that we're so, and I don't mean this to sound too dystopian, but we're so used to being surveilled in some sense, where so many main characters now, I mean, Hawk to a Girl is a great example of just like man on the street TikTokers who will just approach you, and most people are not super shocked or taken off guard by it and know it's going to be posted to this huge audience. And there's just like this culture of self-surveillance. And I like when these kinds of main characters go viral, because it's very rare to see someone behave as if the whole world might not see this anymore. It's like a very pretty, feels very comforting, because I don't think that really exists anymore about it. And like old home videos where people know they're being watched, but they're like, well, no one other than the 12 people I hang out with are going to see this. Jesus
is a friend of mine. Tell us who you are and a little bit about your band.
I'm Paul Williams. I'm lead vocalist. with British ska band The Scapones, amongst many different things. I'm also a writer of ska-related books, and I run a ska music-based charity called The Specialized Project.
Okay, so how did the guy that wrote and sang Jesus Is a Friend of Mine become your bass player for the Scapones set at Supernova in 2023?
That's right, yeah. I always like to think out of the box. So when we're doing the Specialized Project, does a festival every year, 3-day festival. And I was trying to think of something really, really weird to I could bring up or just present at this festival. Now, I thought about getting bands to reform and they weren't having it and stuff like that. And I've seen Jesus and a Friend of Mine. And I've seen other punk bands in the United States doing it with Sal, the lead singer of Sunseed. And I thought that'd be great. That's a bit of a coup because it's obviously an internet sensation. And it took me absolutely ages to track him down. And I had one final, it was on an actor's website and it had an email. I thought, well, I've got nothing to lose. So I introduced myself. I want to do this. What do you think? And then I couldn't believe it. I got an email back and he was saying, yeah, it's me. Yeah, I'm the guy. You know, I was like, brilliant, brilliant. So, and it went from there really. And we've just formed a really good friendship. He comes over to England quite regularly. In fact, he's coming over again this year to do it as well, live at the festival again, because it goes down a storm. And then, of course, you know, as we sometimes when we're going, we came to the United States in 2019 and 2023, and he played. Our bass player left early, a day early, if it got his dates wrong. And I'm thinking, well, what are we going to do? And I thought, well, I know one bass player, only one bass player in the United States. So I said, do you want to do a set for us? He's like, yeah, of course I do. And you know what Sal's like? He's like a giant puppy, isn't he? He's just so full of life and energy. He could show us a thing or two. He really could. And he was up for it. And when we came to America in 2023, he was the first choice. And he played everywhere with us. And the last gig was in Brooklyn. It's a little packed place in Brooklyn. It was fantastic. And there wasn't enough room on the stage. And he was on the floor. And he was rocking out. He was like, you know, rolling back the years. It's just, I love watching him. I love watching his enthusiasm.
So let's go back and discuss that first set at Specialized. This was in 2014.
Possibly. Yeah, I think as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so you bring Sal on stage. He plays. Who's backing him, and how does the crowd react?
There was a covers band called Scarface. They just did like sort of two-tone stuff. And I was trying to get him a band, and I just thought it'd be perfect. You know, just, they would find it easy because the setup of Jesus is a Friend of Mine is easy to learn. And they did a great job. Did a great job. Yeah.
So can you describe the crowd reaction to them suddenly hearing Jesus is a Friend of Mine?
They went off their heads. and I think that's one of the reasons because whether it's the song or because obviously it has a religious connotation. So I was a bit wary of how it would go down. But everybody loved it. Everybody loved it. And they kept saying, is he coming back next year? Is he coming back next year? So, and yes, he is. He comes back every year.
You tell me, actually, if I just remember, like, you told me when we talked about this before that there you had this image in your head of, like, the first time of all these just large, kind of scary-looking skinheads just having the time of their life to Jesus as a Friend of Mine.
That's exactly what it was like. You know, it was like everyone was pogoing, just like all the old punk days, you know, and just bouncing around and stuff like that. It was amazing. It was really infectious. And of course, you know, I think Sal was a little bit wary, but, you know, it didn't have to be. And you could see within 30 seconds, he was into his place and away, and he was just going for it. And his enthusiasm on stage and a good backing band, you know, it filtered into the crowd, and it was just a two-way thing. It was a fantastic experience.
What was your first experience hearing the song Jesus Was a Friend of Mine? Like, when did you become familiar with it?
Quite a while back, long before the 2000s, I think. Very early days of the internet, possibly. And then, knowing what I'm like, I tend to dig deep. And I found some information on Sunseed and stuff like that, just because that's what I do. I just research. And first time I heard it, I thought, sounds like a British ska song. But it wasn't, you know, just that beat, because no one was doing that in America. You know, America's got it used the two tone thing and then made its own. You know, like, let's take a look at the Toasters and people like that, you know, and stuff like that. But But this was raw British ska. If that had been in Coventry in 1980, you know what I mean? He'd have been signed up.
I know a lot of people, ourselves included, wondered if it was real when they saw the video because it was so perfectly weird, you know, with the suits and everything. Did you wonder if it was fake at all?
Yeah, completely. I had to double check, a triple check, a quadruple check, though it wasn't some sort of Saturday Night Live TV spoof or something.
You and Sal became friends. When did you first really start to become friends?
Can't really remember. The years have gone by so quick. But if it was 2014 that you first came over, then probably the year before that. And Sal's just got a really infectious personality. I know I've said it a few times, but he has. So when you start talking, we just started talking via email, and you could see from his email, you know, he was like, yeah, you know, like this big puppy. He just wants to play. He was, yeah, of course I want to play. Yeah. You know, I said, well, I haven't got a lot of money. And he says, don't care. I just want to come and play. So I said, listen, I can put you up for free. I can feed you for free for 3 days. Come enjoy it, you know.
For the U.S. shows that the Scapones played, did Sal filled in on those as well? All of them?
All of them. He was better than all of us.
How was he as a bandmate and on tour?
Again, he's just infectious. I know I keep repeating myself, but he's infectious, you know, and he's like, it's hard not... When you see Sal, you think, everything's going to be all right now. You know, no matter what happens, he's going to be all right. He's here. That's all that matters. And he was always the first to venues. You know, and he was... You know, he was just brilliant. You know, and he was, and when you watch him play as well, because he moves. You know, he moves, and he's always smiling, and you know, and we're used to having moody bass players, so it's a bit weird.
In Defense of Ska will return in a moment.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, to dive more into the history of the song Jesus is a Friend of Mine, we're going to talk to the singer and songwriter of the song, Sal Policitti. Jesus is a friend of mine. I want to talk about the moment you wrote Jesus is a Friend of Mine. Can you bring us to that moment and what your inspiration was?
Absolutely. The band I was in at the time, Sunseed, we were a gospel band. And we were pretty well known locally. And people had wanted us to make a record that we could sell at the concerts. So the songs they were picking for the album, I wasn't on any of it. I mean, live in concert, I sang 60 to 75% of the stuff live. But the songs they were picking, original songs they were picking for the album, I wasn't on it at all. So my first wife, who was the keyboard player in that video from 1982, had already written dozens of terrific Christian rock songs. So I said to her, I have to write a song or I'm not going to get on this record. 2 weeks before, about a month before that, I had heard on the radio, there was a very famous disc jockey here in New York for years, Scott Muni. And every Friday afternoon, Scott Muni would play imports. Now, for those of you, I have to explain to my kids what an import is. Back then, there was no internet. So if you wanted to hear a record that was recorded in England, someone had to put it on a plane or a boat and fly it over here. Of course, record radio stations had everything. So he plays, and he didn't say it was ska. He said, "And here's Too Much Pressure by the Selector." And I was having a rough day as it was, but I heard that song and right away I started bouncing. I said, this is really cool. What a great feel. It's like an up-tempo polka. What a great feel. So I I had that in my head, and I went into the bathroom, and 15 minutes later, I came out with this. I'm sitting on a bowl writing lyrics, and I came out with the song. And I presented it to Sunseed. They didn't get it. The drummer didn't know what to do. My wife, the keyboard player, didn't know what to do. I said, no, play it like a... On the upbeats? Yes, on the upbeats. And they were hemming and hawing. We did the song before the recording. We did the song in concert, and everybody loved it. So they went, okay, it's on the record. Well, that was the inspiration. It was too much pressure by the selector. And I've always said to Paul, if the selector ever comes to the big one, I just got to go up to them and say, see this? This is all your fault. And he says he's asked them several times, but they've always been too busy or working or whatever, or not or unable to show up. But I'm hoping someday to meet one of them.
Can you explain a little bit in more detail about Sunseed and what your other songs sounded like? Even curious if you had any specific songs you can mention from the catalog.
Well, we started out, one of the guys who eventually started the group, it was his church was having an anniversary and the bishop was coming to say a mass. So they asked him to put together some folk music for the mass. So he called in a bunch of favors. Me and my first wife were his cousins. My wife was his first cousin. And that's where we met most of the people that wound up being in Sunseed. And afterwards, we all went out to eat, and we were talking about church music in general and how Catholic music was just so boring. So he says, well, why don't we just start a band? Now, meanwhile, a bunch of us had been in bands, so we said, okay, we can do that. Most of the people in Sunseed were just church singers. But the five or six musicians, we said, okay, we'll put something together. And we started out taking the songs in the missalettes, you know, the church songs, and putting a drum beat to them, put a guitar solo in, put a flute solo in. And that's how it started. And then people started to write songs. And we had a pretty cutting edge at the time, I think. Well, on the album is, we do kind of an R&B version of Oh Happy Day, where we kind of, you know, R&B'd it up a little bit. But most of the other songs are just basically just Christian pop songs or Christian rock songs.
Okay, interesting.
What do you remember from the recording process for Jesus Was a Friend of Mine? Like, you can either talk about, I mean, there's an album version, am I correct?
Well, it's the same version that's on that what you saw in that video that we did on the TV show from 1982. We were moving our lips to the record.
Okay, so let's start with how it was recording it in the studio, and then tell us a little bit about shooting that video.
Well, nobody really paid it much mind, to tell you the truth. If you've ever been in a recording studio, you know, sometimes a song could take hours to record.
Yeah.
We finished recording one of my wife's songs, and from the time they said, okay, let's do Jesus Is a Friend of Mine, to the sign they said, okay, what's the next one? It's about 35 minutes. Rhythm tracks, one take. Guitar solo, one take. My vocal, one take. I said, I think I could do it better. They went, no, it's fine. I mean, look, it was exciting to be in the studio with the band, so I wasn't insulted. But they kind of blew it off a little bit, you know. And the way it turned out was that's why I was so excited. COVID kind of interrupted it, but I did wind up re-recording the song with Rude Boy George, who I played with in England. They're from New Jersey.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we were going to make a video and the whole bit, but it was great recording the song actually with a real live ska band. But now the TV show, because we had been popular locally and because we were all Catholic, which was unusual for a gospel band, NBC Channel 4 in New York had this show on Sunday mornings, The First Estate, Religion in Review. It's kind of like a David Susskind for religion talk show. In fact, on our show was someone from the Salvation Army touting some of their fundraisers and two young rabbis who taught the Old Testament using marionettes. They called it Punchin' Judaism. It's kind of creepy, actually, but it was very effective. They told us what to wear. They said, we had a little meeting with them beforehand, like two or three of us went up to NBC. What do you guys dress with? How do you guys dress when you play? Oh, we wear t-shirts and jeans. Oh, no, not for television. You have to look nice. They told us to wear vests because vests look very nice. They told us to wear blue. We didn't know what we were doing when we got on the show, but they told, oh, you're going to move your lips to a couple of songs. Okay, fine. We get there and they said, oh, we set up. And they said, okay, we're going to open the show with that Jesus is a Friend of Mine song. And the whole group went, oh, really? And I went, yeah, FaceTime on TV. It was a complete, it wasn't planned. It was a complete accident. I figured it out very quickly which camera was on because I saw the red lights go on. So I was looking back and forth. Yeah, that's pretty much how that happened. And the band broke up like a year later. For 25 years, no one even gave it a mention.
Now, you played a second song on that show as well?
Yes. One of my, a ballad that my, a beautiful song that my first wife, Patricia, wrote.
What's it called?
It was called Another Kind of Love Song.
Okay.
And it was beautiful. It actually was the first song she ever wrote. Because after Sunseed broke up, she took the rhythm section from Sunseed and we did tours with her, backing her up. And her career never took off like she was hoping it would. And she just gave up. She just stopped. It's a shame. Because she was really talented.
Do you recall anything else about that first state recording related to the Sunseed performance?
People ask me about the bass I used. The headless, people thought it was a Steinberger. It wasn't. It was a cheap Kramer knockoff. It was a horrible bass. I used it for the TV show because it looked cool. And I knew I wasn't playing live. So I just, it was exciting. I mean, it was, you know, local, it was Channel 4 in New York. Nobody saw it other than here, but it was exciting. It was just fun to get at least some kind of a recognition on somewhat of a local stage other than our block.
Sal, do you remember the first time you saw the video online? And what were your friends telling you about it?
Oh my God. How that happened. I got a phone call. I was doing a lot of local theater at the time. I got a phone call from a guy who ran a theater. And he says, somebody just called me from California. They want to know if you were in a band called Sunseed in Brooklyn. I said, yeah, I was. Well, I didn't give him your phone number, but here's his phone number. So I called the guy, Doug Principali. I said, oh, yes, Doug. Hi, yes, I'm Sal from Sunseed. Do I owe you money? Did I date your sister? You know, what? He goes, are you near a computer? I said, yes, I am. And he gave me the address of his blog site. It was a Where Are They Now trivia, old TV shows, old movies blog site. And the first thing I saw on the blog site was our video from that TV show. I went, I was shocked. I mean, I know I taped it. I have it on VCR on my shelf. But I says, how did you get this? He goes, well, I was living in Brooklyn in 1981, 82. And after this show aired, a priest friend of mine came over my house and he says, you got to see this. Well, I was looking for stuff to put on my show, going through my old batch of tapes, and I found this video. I says, let me put it on my blog and not say anything, not say where it was from, not how old it was. I just put it on my show and it just exploded. People thought it was fake. Well, sure, the way we were dressed. Yeah. I thought we were like Sha-na-na, like dressed like the 80s. Mm-hmm. In fact, my favorite story was that it was entered in a video clip gong show. And Jane Weedon from the Go-Go's gonged it. And she was unmercifully booed by the crowd. So if I ever run into Jane Weedland. But so he did an interview with me to prove to his followers that it wasn't fake, because he goes, I knew it wasn't fake because I had the tape. So, and then about a month later, somebody had pulled it off his feed and put it on YouTube. And then somebody called me up and says, I just saw you on from there. I says, oh no, what did I do now? He goes, no, not you now. You like a long time ago, dressed in blue. Jesus is a friend of mine. And I looked and I saw it. I logged on as a YouTube user and I said, yeah, that's me. I'm the guy. And then everything just went nuts.
That's terrific, Sal. Thank you very much. Beautiful, beautiful.
I got an interview with Doug from Dougsploitation, but it was an email interview and I couldn't get him to do a recording. So he said we can just read some of his answers to my questions. I was really curious about from Doug was really understanding the journey this video took from the day it was recorded in 1981 till it went viral in 2008. So to convey these answers, Adam's going to read his answers. I'm going to read those questions. So first question, where did you get a copy of this video?
A coworker of mine gave it to me. Her husband at the time worked for NBC, and she knew I collected weird shit on video, and she thought I'd find some stuff on the tape amusing. The rest of the tape had some funny clips from the soap opera Another World, news bloopers, foreign commercials, and stuff like that. The Sunseed clip was just a small part of the assortment. I was reunited with a woman a few years ago via Facebook and told her the whole story. She didn't even remember giving me the tape, and she was long divorced from her ex. I immediately thought the song was a riot and that Sal was hysterical. At first, I wasn't sure if it was for real or a parody. Then, at some point, I must have realized that it was from the local WNBC Sunday morning show, The First Estate.
I read that you basically showed it to everyone you could for a while.
The tape followed me from New York to San Francisco to Los Angeles, and everywhere I went, I shared it with friends. I've been hosting VHS viewing parties for the past 30 years or so, and Sunseed was usually on the program. 2001, shortly after moving to LA, I saw that Outfest, LA's LGBTQ film festival, was hosting the home video gong show. The concept was that people would enter videos that they found or made, and a panel of celebrity judges would rate them or gong them. I saw that one of the judges was avant-garde performance artist actress Anne Magnusson, who I was a big fan of. So I decided to buy a ticket and bring Sunseed with me. The video was entered in the competition and was played before a packed house, and the crowd loved it. But it was sadly gonged by Jane Wheeldon of the Go-Go's. Luckily, Anne Magnusson enjoyed it, and I recall her commenting on Sal's flawless skin. Suffice to say, I've been friends with Anne, as well as the game's host, Dennis Hensley, ever since. So the tape literally changed my life that night.
How did the song become a viral video?
My friend Peleg Top asked me if he could borrow the tape. I think he surprised me by digitizing it. He originally uploaded it to Vimeo. That's when I decided to blog about the clip and my long obsession with it. Then someone was able to steal the clip from Vimeo and upload it to YouTube. I remember trying to contact the person, but they never responded. I moved on.
Once it took off, you tracked down Sal to interview him for Dougsploitation. What was that like?
Well, I was at first afraid to contact him because I thought he might be some judgmental holy roller. But I think after our first email conversation, we realized we were both cool. Lol. Meeting him on one of my first return visits to New York was a pleasure. We talked about so many other things than Sunseed. We kept in touch for a while, and we exchanged Christmas cards for a few years. But until yesterday, we haven't communicated in quite some time. I love that he was able to revive his music career. He's a talented guy and a truly sweet human being. Jesus is a friend of
mine. So how do you think this song stacks up as a ska song and as a Christian song?
Well, I feel like I'm in the presence of experts. I don't know how this stacks up as a ska song. It sounds like a ska song, which to me is the bar.
Yeah, it does.
Yep.
My dad was a huge ska fan, and we were listening to the Specials a few days before he died. So I'm like, I have the ska, like, I don't know, the ska nostalgia about me right now. It sounds like a ska song. I say it's a ska song. Mm-hmm. Is it good? I'll leave that to you guys. As a Christian song, I think it is good because it's not, because it's fun. Most Christian songs are aggressively unfun and trying to make you feel horrible about yourself or like reminding you of a really brutal murder that happened thousands of years ago. So in that way, it is not reminding me of murder, and it's not even asking me to do anything. So that's a very successful Christian song to me.
So Sal, when we met at Supernova, you seemed really delighted to talk about the song, and you see it as a gift. So what's your take on that?
The whole song was a gift. I mean, that's the only song I ever wrote.
Really?
And the reason, it's not that I haven't tried. I have tried. That's not that's not my gift. I have a gift of interpretation, perhaps, but songwriting is not my gift. I mean, I read the lyrics or I hear the lyrics and I go, how was I ever that clever? I could never be that clever again. You try to make it rhyme and be funny, and it's just balls of paper in the corner for me. Mm. One thing I didn't mention, but I had wanted to mention before, and I don't know if you want to use it in case you're curious.
Yeah.
I was wondering about what the British ska connection. After that 2019 tour, Willow wrote a book about the tour. Because earlier that year, they were on tour with the Specials, and Hall was giving them all kinds of advice. So I bought the book. I said, well, I did the tour with them. I got to be in the book somewhere. He's got to mention me. And not only did he mention me, he did a 3-page thing on the history of Sunseed. He must have looked it up on Wikipedia, which most of that stuff was true. There is no second unreleased Sunseed album. If you read that, that's false. But then he mentioned that he got his first computer in 2010. And he was searching the internet and he found the video, because that's about when it hit. And he found out that an American wrote a 2-tone ska song in 1981. And I think that was, I went, oh, okay, I got it. It's the pioneer thing. And I couldn't understand. The first time I went there, everybody's, oh, here he is, the legend. What, the legend? What the hell are you talking about? And then when I read the book, it kind of explained it a little bit to me, you know.
What's the name of the book?
I don't know. I got it on my shelf.
That's fine. We'll look it up. Yeah.
Yes, Paul Williams. It was about their tour, but it's the whole thing is a surprise. It's a blessing. People meet me on podcasts or in person. They go, "Oh man, you're such a nice guy. How do you not be a nice guy? I mean, I didn't plan any of this." I'm going to beat that horse until it drops dead. and my wife just smiles and goes along, and my kids ignore it completely.
I think that's exactly the exact quote you said to us at Supernova. And I love you for that. Like, just that I'm enjoying this ride. Like, I'm going to beat this until the wheels come off.
What the heck?
Sal told us that Jesus is a Friend of Mine is the only song he's ever written. what do you think about that for somebody who has only ever written this one song, for it to have this sort of longevity? How does that make you feel?
I feel really happy for him. Absolutely. And I think seeing, because when they play at Specialized, or the events I put on, or when we play around the States with him, because we did the song in the set while we went around the States, and it's, see the joy in people's faces is priceless. And again, you know, they don't think too much about the lyrics. I think they take the lyrics as they come. They don't worry about it. And you know, because for some it could be, well, it's not my thing, you know, but I think a lot of the success is down to the fact that we discussed it was a very cheesy video, completely so far that we didn't know it was real. So it looks like a comedy sketch, which it does. It looks like an 80s comedy sketch. And there's that. There's the fact it's an internet sensation. There's the fact that it's been turned to Satan as a Friend of Mine and God knows what else, you know. And it's and there's a lot of this, yeah. I don't know, but I'm happy for him. I'm really happy for him that he did this, because, you know, he's not living a life off it, but as such, like if we say financially or whatever like that, but he's just really happy. And he's so dismissive of it at the same time. He goes, if you say something to him, he goes, oh, well, you know, it's just a song I wrote 45 years ago.
I think, like, you brought up it being religious several times. I think what it is that it's not a preachy song. It's not like a, you need Jesus or you're going to hell song. It's just a, like, I love Jesus. Jesus is rad. So, I mean, even if you're not religious, you're like, whatever, that guy's happy.
Well, that's it as well. He's unashamedly saying, you know, this is, it works for me, you know, and that's fair play. If that makes you feel good, mate, you go for it, you know?
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to In Defense of Ska. To support the show, sign up for our Patreon. Intro and outro music by Slow Gherkin from the EP Lives. Additional music by Dan P. and the Bricks. Please rate and review the podcast and tell a friend. Follow at In Defense of Ska on social media. The book In Defense of Ska by Aaron Carnes is available from Clash Books. Order it online. Chris Reeves of SPI is our editor. This is your co-host, Adam Davis of Omnigon, leaving you by saying ska now more than ever.
Rhesus is a friend of mine, Aaron Carnes. You know who else is a friend of mine, Aaron?
Who?
People who sign up for the Patreon. That's right.
Yeah.
You listen to the episode. This episode was a little bit different. We put a lot into it. Why not go support Scott? Why not support this show that brings you so much joy? I know it brings you joy because you tell me every week. Right, Aaron? They tell you too?
You know how we're able to do episodes like this? It's from our Patreon subscribers supporting us. Mentally, physically, and spiritually supporting us.
But seriously, folks, we love your support. Chris put a lot of effort into the editing for this episode, and that's where all your money goes right now. Being totally serious right now. So pay up.
No money, no Chris.
Yeah. And then you'll just get the unfiltered version of this, which is just what this sounds like right now. Not great.
Not good.
Not great to have a whole podcast that sounds like that.
So please support the Patreon so that it continues to be a listenable podcast.
Help us help you.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.